What's up? It's your boy 911, and you tuned in to AVG Podcast. As always, man, you know how we do it. Let's get to it. So the other day, I mentioned that I would have a very special guest that I would be highlighting for Black History Month. And to say I'm honored and blessed to have her on is an understatement. So to give her her proper due and her just flowers, I would ask you to allow me to kind of work through her resume before we get started. We have the first African-American to run a competitive campaign in Louisiana. The National President of the National Congress of Black Women, President of the Dick Gregory Society, Board Member of the World Conference of Mayors, former Professor of Law at the University of Southern Law Center, served in President Obama administration as a member of his Presidential Scholars Commission, an ordained minister, served as President of Grambling State University National Alumni Association, inducted into the History Makers and the GSU Hall of Fame. Multitude of degrees from Grambling, USC, Howard, Atlanta Law School, University of Michigan, Pepperdine, George Washington. Member of Delta Sigma Theta, NAACP. She's penned a few books. Some of the most notable are The Peace Terrorists, where it was a day-by-day account of a 40-day-long peace mission prior to the first Gulf War, where she, along with 200 other women, were held at gunpoint in the Arabian Sea for 20 days long. She also has Dick Gregory Wake Up and Stay Woke book that she's working with now. In 1995, helped organize a Million Man March, serving as host committee co-chair and international spokesman. I could go on and do a list on just her accolades and her accomplishments of what she's been doing as a trailblazer for the African-American community since day one. But without further ado, I'd like to welcome Dr. E. Faye Williams, Esquire, to the show. How are you doing today?
Oh, I am blessed and highly favored. This is so special that you would have me on your show. I'm so glad you called me, found me. That means that everybody in the world can find me wherever I am. I know I've traveled a lot, but I'm in Washington, D.C. now.
Okay. And just to kind of highlight your work right now, I know the Dick Gregory Formation, God rest his soul, Dick Gregory, rest in peace. You and him were good friends, and you're the president of the Dick Gregory Society. If you'd like to talk a little bit about more than that into it before we get into the interview, let them know what that's all about and what kind of information they can find with that.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, first of all, let me give out the website so that those who want to hear more about it than I would say today, you may go to thedickgregorysociety.org. Put T-H-E in front of it, thedickgregorysociety.org. Dick Gregory was one of my best friends. I was the last person in the room with him when he passed away at the hospital. I'd been there with him all week, also one of his daughters and a couple of sons. We were all there, but they gave me the honor of being the last one in the room with him. We did so many things together, and those are many things that I want to continue in his honor. First of all, I do a radio program in his honor now called Wake Up and Stay Woke. And the reason I call it Wake Up and Stay Woke is that before he passed away, those were the last words I heard him say that evening. It was a Saturday evening, and there was a lot of noise in his hospital room, and he said to everybody, wake up and stay woke. You can't learn anything if you're talking all the time. Wow. So he was cautioning us to listen and to learn. And that is what he did all the time, whether young people or anyone. He would tell them, you need to listen sometime, you need to read. And so it was a very painful thing for me because he and I used to picket together. We would travel throughout the world, throughout the country, and we would protest and help people with whatever their problems were. We even came to Louisiana. We went to Texas. We went to London, England, to try to get people paid from that British Petroleum oil spill a few years back. Mm-hmm. We went to communities all around the country where people were harmed by it, and BP had not paid them the damage that was done. Ultimately, some of them did get paid. I know that everybody didn't, and some people lost their life in it. But the point is, we did everything that we could. We protested over, you know, many people who were killed, for example, Trayvon Martin and others. And Mr. Gregory, of course, was against capital punishment. He used to protest for that. Nothing was ever too difficult for us, because one of the things he taught me was that fear and God do not occupy the same space. Yes. So I thought after he passed away, I wanted to help his family to keep his name and the work, alive. And of course, you know that he worked a lot in the civil rights movement. He even gave up his own career for a while in order to work to help get voting rights for us, to get basic human rights for us. And he did that not just in this country, but around the world. He helped the Native Americans with their fishing rights. There was never a problem with him going wherever there was a challenge was, and he taught me to do that same thing. So I thought that I would organize the Dick Gregory Society so that we could carry on much of the work. And one of his sons, Dr. Christian Gregory, is working with me. The first thing I did was set up the radio program. As I said, it's WPFW-FM 89.3.
Okay.
I'm on every Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock Eastern time. So I hope some of your listeners will join in sometime and listen to the program. I have very interesting people on who teach us a lot of things. It's a wonderful program. And it's on, as I said, every Wednesday morning. The things that we're doing in the Dick Gregory Society are, second, I wrote the book about his life and the things that we did together so that people will know many of the wonderful things he did. His son also just put out a book called The Essential Dick Gregory. And both The Essential Dick Gregory and then my book, Wake Up and Stay Woke, are all on Amazon, or people can call me. I never mind people emailing me. And if I may, I'll give out my email so that old friends who may be listening will be in touch with me. You know, I'm from Louisiana. I'm a Louisiana. I'm a country girl, and I love to hear from folks back home. Yes, Dr. E. Faye Williams at gmail.com, and that's Dr. and then the letter E, and then Faye Williams at gmail.com. So please, if you're listening to this show that Mr. Dupar puts on all the time for you and teaches you various things, I hope you will be in touch with me. This is Black History Month. As he said, next month is Women's History Month. And we talk about all those things on my program. And we don't just limit Black History to February, because as Mr. Gregory always said, they just gave us the shortest month in the year. But that's okay. We celebrate Black History every day.
Preach. And look, that's a precursor to what I wanted to ask you about. Like you say, next month we'll be going into we'll be celebrating Women's History Month. And you cannot bring up women's history without bringing your name to the forefront. As I mentioned early on in the introduction, you were one of the first people to run, black person to run a successful campaign in Louisiana. So let's talk a little bit about you. How was that early on? And what did you face going into that arena at that time, where we see women throughout the landscape of politics now, but that wasn't the case when you stepped in? How was that? Can you speak about that?
Well, thank you for asking. Actually, I was the first to run for a statewide office like the United States Congress.
Wow.
And since that time, I hope that I was some inspiration to them. I think about four more people have been elected to come to the United States Congress from the New Orleans area. I'm just waiting for the day it will come around my hometown. But the other thing that I'm very proud of is that women began running. And the last time I checked, Louisiana had about 20 or 21 black women mayors in the state. And they weren't running before that time. Many of them have thanked me for the inspiration I gave them for running.
Yes.
So we need our people to run, because there's so many things we still need in society. For example, you see down in Florida, the governor is against teaching the real black history. When we are in office, we can prevent those problems from occurring. We can go against that. But I hope people will understand every vote makes a difference. When I ran, for example, I don't know if you remember, you were too small probably to remember, but I was announced as the winner and it was called back. And the basic problem was there in Rapides Parish, unfortunately, my own home parish. And I was called back and I was told that I lost by less than 0.5%. Just a few more black people in particular who would have voted, we could have won that election.
Wow.
Now, you don't cry over that. I decided to just get up and move on and do many other things in my life. I've been able to study more. I've gained my, I had gained my law degree already, but I've gained 3 doctorate degrees. And people go, oh, wow, 3 doctorate degrees. I say, well, if you do one, you can do another one. You know how to do it. So I've gone on to become an ambassador, a peace ambassador through the United Nations. And I work with people around the world. For example, I've been in contact with people in Ukraine and Lithuania and all of the areas nearby. You always have something that you can do if you're just willing to try it. Yeah, people had not been running for Congress or any other high offices in Louisiana. Even after I ran for office, there was a woman who ran for governor of Louisiana.
Wow.
They hadn't been running before that time.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I did not win the race, there were many other people who have won since that time. And it was a dangerous thing to do. Sometimes we went into little cities and towns around, and we had to have police escorts to be there. But it was okay. Again, I repeat what Mr. Gregory always taught me, is that fear and God do not occupy the same space. I went since that time on a trip to the Middle East, where I was on a ship with 200 women from around the world. And actually, we were attacked by the United States forces, and the captain of the ship was arrested. But he put me in charge of the ship while he had his handcuffs on, and they were taking him away. So I had to help the women to settle down and to do the things we needed to do, to figure out how we were going to get food on the ship, to figure out how we were going to let people know where we were, because the United States did not tell people. I was working for a congressman. That's the only way they found me in terms of where I was. But again, I wasn't afraid, because there were too many things to do to make a difference on that ship, and I did that. I've gone and traveled abroad. I traveled to Haiti. Sometimes the moment you get into the country, as when I first went there, you start hearing the gunshots, you know, going off. But again, I went there to do a job. I got the job done with all of that, and actually became friends with some of the people who were executing the war there, or the coup, as they called it then. I've been so many places in the world. It's been wonderful. I've been able to inspire young people from all over the world to become sort of like my children, even though I don't have any blood children, but I have nieces and nephews. I try to impart with to them what they can do if only they will try, and you know, get a mentor, get someone to help you figure out what the direction of your life should be. You know, maybe you've been discouraged about some things, but don't be. You can do anything you want to do, so long as you're willing to pay the price. And both Coach Eddie Robinson from Grambling and my mother just told me that all the time. You can do anything you want to do, so long as you're willing to pay the price. And sometimes the price is high, but that's all right. You do it if it must be done.
Now,
I've never missed a time of voting in all of my life. Voting can make a difference. Every vote can make a difference. So I hope I will never hear any of our people say, my vote won't make a difference, because it will. There have been elections, important elections, won by one vote.
Man, it's very true. And it's something that I think, just to speak on that, I think that our community, we've gotten a lot better. We've taken strides, but I still don't think we put the seriousness in it that we should. And it's because over the years, I think the distrust in the government and things like that, we kind of build that shell. But like you say, y'all here, right here, it is very important. Every vote counts. Make sure anything, and start at your city levels when you start voting, because vote for the things that make the immediate change and then expand out. Because if you just vote on the broader scale, you don't see the immediate change that you're asking for, and then your vote truly does it. I won't say it doesn't matter, but you're not seeing the immediate results that you may would like. So I'm glad you kind of spoke on that.
Right. And you know, Avery, I'm not saying that every black person has to vote for every black person who runs.
Very
you
true.
Still have to look at their record, see what they're doing. If there are other people of other races who are doing important things, we have to vote for them too. But
Very
we
true.
Also should expect them to vote for our people when we run. I was disappointed to learn that the mayor of Alexandria, the previous mayor, had done a great job there, but that there were many of our people who didn't come out and vote for him. And that's unfortunate. Now, I hope the person who did win will do some great things for Alexandria, because it's my hometown, and I still care about it. I still go to Alexandria to visit with my family. I have a sister there. I have nieces and nephews there, and you're one of my nephews, too. You know, they're all over the place, but I call all young men and young women who are coming along behind me, my nieces and my nephews, unless they want me to call them my children.
Yeah.
I don't have any blood children, but I have a whole bunch of young people that I work with as a mentor.
See, people don't know. All I've heard all my life is Unfaith. So I'll go ahead and disclose that right now. This is what we officially call Unfaith in the family.
Right.
So that, I do know her a little bit more than most. I will say that.
Yes, I just had a young woman who just came back home from Venezuela. I heard from her last night. One of the first people she contacted was me. And she said, hello, mama. You know? And then others is Aunt Faye. You know, mm-hmm. Most of them in Alexandria call me Aunt Faye.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Texas, I have a lot in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, since I've been in Washington, I've been able to help a lot of young people who have come to Washington. I've had several nieces and nephews come from California, from Texas, from Louisiana. In fact, I have a niece who's with me now here in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
I've had others who've come up from Alexandria. I know you know my brother, Sonny, who was a member of the sheriff's office when he was living. His daughter, Terry, is here, and his grandson, VJ. They're all here.
Yeah,
they came
right.
up because I brought them up here, and Terry is doing so well.
That is
VJ
deep.
Is now in high school.
What?
Yes. And then my nephew, who is Marie's son, Keith, is here. He's a teacher now. He's gotten his master's degree, and he's teaching Dee Dee. Some people call her name was Espinola,
mm-hmm.
and she's from Houston. She is here. She's head of her department at Federal Express.
Okay.
Let's see. I have my nephew, Troy, here, Ronald Troy Smith.
Okay,
he works with me a lot and helps me a lot. So I have lots of family. My sister Bernice, who's my oldest sister,
mm-hmm.
she's here
mm-hmm.
in Washington, D.C.
Okay,
so we're forming a little clan here in Washington,
yeah.
D.C. But you know, we still come to Louisiana. As a matter of fact, we all gather, even though Mother left us almost 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We are still gathering. We will be in Alexandria in May for Mother's Day.
Okay, that is wonderful. And you just kind of highlighted a few minutes ago some of the mentorship you're doing, and as far as like so many people, like your hands are extended, you can see your legacy living throughout is what you're doing and what you're producing throughout the world. But where did you find that mentorship early on? That, because like you say, you were the first. So when you're the first, and I think people not really understanding when you said you needed police escorts to go in places, I don't think they really can true if we can even capture the being the first and being the trailblazer. But where did you find that ear to talk to, or that shoulder to lean on, just as a woman coming up in politics early on?
Well, first of all, I have to say my mother was a mentor to many young people, whether they were her children or not.
Mm-hmm.
That never made a difference. If they were hungry or whatever, they came by her house. She always had enough food. She always had enough. Whatever it was she had to give them, we had to divide among ourselves as brothers and sisters and neighbors who would come by, and she treated everyone as though it was her child. Then I had the opportunity to leave Peabody High School, where I had Miss Emanuel, who was one of my English teachers. I loved her, and she always inspired me to do things. Then I went on to Grambling, and when I got to Grambling, somehow people like Coach Eddie Robinson, Dr. Helen Richard Smith, and others became, you know, my big sisters and big brothers, and they always challenged me to do things that maybe no one else was trying or doing on campus. And then when I left there, I went to California, and I decided I wanted to go back to school. I went to UCLA for a while, then the University of Southern California. And every class that I had a mentor who would always push me, you know, letting me know or telling me I could do better or I could do something else. The basic thing was, you can be anything you want to be so long as you're willing to pay the price. And don't worry about it if you have to pay the price. It's okay. Just remember, we all have this God who takes care of us and maybe moves us out of things onto something else that we didn't think we could do. But he gives us the energy, gives us the skill to do it. And as long as you are willing to work to get what you want to do instead of trying to take something or put someone else down, you can manage that. And when you have to get out of it, it just means that God has something else planned for you. For instance, I was the national president of the National Congress of Black Women that you mentioned for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. And during those last years, I had some challenges. I got very sick too last year, and I couldn't really do all of the work I had been doing. But you know what? God has blessed me, and I've moved on. I'm now a producer of documentaries. Wow. I have written my life story. I have done several things, help people to write their life story, which is something I'm doing now. And I'm getting other people into having an agent or having a representative for their talents, you mm-hmm, see? Mm-hmm. And it's even better than what I was doing before, even though for almost 20 years I was afraid to move out of that spot that I was in, mm-hmm. because I basically thought that nobody could do it the way I do it, you know? Yeah, but I'm sure someone will come along, even though they call me almost every day to do something. But I'm not getting paid by them anymore, so I have to give my attention. Yeah. And since Mr. Gregory's been gone, uh-huh. there was a documentary made called The One and Only Dick Gregory, mm-hmm. and I hope people have had an opportunity to go to see The One and Only Dick Gregory. It's with several people like Kevin Hart, Nick Cannon, Dave Chappelle, and I have a bit part in that one called The One and Only Dick Gregory. Okay. And you can get it on Showtime On Demand. It's on all the time. Okay. Also, you mentioned earlier when you were introducing me that I worked at the Million Man March, and most people think I'm talking about the Million Woman March. No. I was the with Dr. Benjamin Chavis mm-hmm. in the Million Man March, and I traveled around the country. I talked about it, and the way that I got a chance to be the the assistant to Dr. Chavis was that Minister Farrakhan came to talk about having a holding and planning for the Million Man March. I raised my hand. You can see it said, and the women get to stay home and take care of the children or whatever. I raised my hand. I said, Minister, you know, I love you, I respect you, but I don't have any children at home, so what am I going to do on that day? Yeah. You know, that's me. I get into things myself. Uh-huh. And so the next morning, I got a call from Dr. Chavis's office saying, you are the, co-director, vice chair of the Million Man March. Wow. And one of the things, pretty soon, a documentary will be coming out about my leadership in the Million Man March. I'll let you know when it comes out. It's not out yet. It's been filmed. Okay. One day, the cameras showed up at my house from HBO, and I mean, they just took over my house and made this documentary. A documentary is also being made about my work on that ship we mentioned earlier, the Ship of Peace, when the 200 women from around the world were on the ship looking for peace. That's what we were trying to do, is prevent that first Gulf War. Mm-hmm. And when we got caught up in the sea. And we were out there for 40 days. We'd only planned to be there 20 days, but 20 of those days we were held at gunpoint.
Wow.
And the way that my mom heard about it is someone from Alexandria saw me on television with my hands up. They thought that I was holding the gun away from me, but actually I was just holding my hand up, surrendering, you know. But once the soldiers left the ship, then the women chose me to sort of be their supervisor, be, you know, helpful to them, and I did that. I would be up every morning at 4 o'clock to find out if new ships, new airplanes, whatever, were around us, and to find out were they friends or were they enemies. I did that for 20 days, and we successfully came into Iraq, where we were coming to bring milk, food, and medicine to the women in Iraq. I've been back to Iraq several times to visit with some of the people, but then, of course, we were the last ship to come into Iraq before the bombs started falling. Wow. And we were the last one to go out of Iraq before the bombs started falling that night. So it's been an exciting life, but I still find many things to do. There are a lot of things to be happy about. I mean, you can get up any morning and be sad or wonder what you're going to do with it. I don't have that problem. I wake up every morning knowing there is something I can do to help somebody.
Just listening to you talk, I can hear the leadership just ooze from you and ooze from your voice. And so that's what I wanted to, while you were telling the story, I didn't want to stop because I was intrigued just listening. But you were on that ship, you had no prior military training, and like you say, you were on a peace tour, and the captain, as you say, he was taken in, and so you got thrusted in that position. Like, what went through your mind? Did you have any reservations? But I see as I talk to you, you go through everything head on. But did you have any reservations? It's like, what now?
I didn't, because I was busy every day. The reason I would get up at 4 a.m. to look out over the sea and look around us and find out what's going on was because I didn't want the women to panic. Mm-hmm. And so I had to, you know, keep this front up. Someone got sick, I remember, on the ship. Mm-hmm. And No one would go in the room to help her. They thought maybe she had cholera or some disease she had gotten. So I thought, what if this were my mother? I would want someone to go in and see about her. Wow. So I went into one of the rooms there, got gloves, I got a sheet, put it all around me, walked in, picked her up and put her in the shower. Wow. And then put her back in her bed after the bed had been, you know, cleaned up. It's just that when you know something has to be done and nobody else is doing it, you just do it, you know. Wow. You don't think about all the things that could happen, because you can be walking around in your house and fall and break your leg or whatever, you know. I remember one time there was someone who drew a gun on my mother. And as afraid as I am of guns, that day I walked right up to him and twisted the gun out of his hand wow. to save my mother. I mean, when you have a reason to do something, you forget about the fear.
Wow.
You forget about the fear. Yes. It's people who just sit around and do nothing who are afraid to take the next step. You take one step and you know if it's for you, God helps you to take the next step. And I've been in that position several times. So I'm very pleased that my mother taught me to be that way. I had a lot of brothers and sisters. As you know, there are 9 of us.
Yeah.
And I've always done all that I could to be a leader, to be a mentor to the younger brothers and sisters, my nieces, my nephews, friends, children, anyone who comes to me and wants me to be their mentor. I have never said no to anyone. I've tried to help them to become all that they can be. I'm a country girl. I tell everybody that, a country girl, but it doesn't mean that there I have to say, oh no, I can't do that, or oh no, I can't try that. No, mm-hmm. I've been among people who did some wonderful things. As I said, I was so inspired by Coach Robinson. One might think that that's you know, different. He was, after all, a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't matter. People have skills that aren't necessarily related to their field, and that's who it was, because I was never a big sports person, even though I'm a sports fan, because there's so many great players out there that I met when I was at Grambling or when I went back to Grambling to speak. I've met throughout the country, so I got skills from all of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't limit myself to one subject. If you look at my master's, my doctorate, my undergraduate degrees, they're all in different fields, but it just means I've learned something about all those fields, and it makes me a broader person to be able to help other people in whatever they want to do. And even if I don't have any skills, they're basic in their field, they're basic leadership skills that you can teach to everyone.
Man, that is so true. I tell people all the time, being a good leader, that's something that's transferable to no matter what field you're in. You have to know
yes.
how to galvanize people and be a leader of people and make everybody believe mm-hmm. in your vision. To me, that's what a good leader yes. consists of.
And you know, Avery, it's not about education, you know, like as we talk about schooling, I think my mom used to call it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about that. You can be a leader with very little knowledge that you learned in school. My mom never really had a chance to go to school a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? After we all grew up, she went back to school and studied, and she got an honorary doctorate degree. We started laughingly calling her Dr. Mother, you know. But she earned it, as
yes.
far as I'm concerned, in her community service,
yes.
what she did with her 9 children, what she did with her neighbor's children, how she
yes.
helped people in the community. I remember Mother must have been almost 90 years old, and she was still saying, I got to go over to the church and help those old people. And
yeah.
they were all younger,
yeah.
younger than she was.
Yeah.
But she could still, you know, physically she was fine until she left us. In fact, the doctor said, oh, she wasn't sick. It was just her time to go. She almost
wow.
made 100, and we always say, well, she did make the 100 according to Mr. Gregory's theory, because he always said you have to count the 9 months you're in your mama's belly, and she just right up to that point, you know.
Yeah.
When we were growing up, she never wanted to bother us about her being sick. She would always say, oh, baby, don't worry about me. I'm going to live until I was 100, and according to his theory, she lived until she was 100.
And for y'all that don't know, I still dream about those grilled cheese sandwiches. This is one of her light dishes. This was just a snack for us. But that grilled cheese sandwich
yes,
is
yes.
famous.
Yeah. I remember Dwayne, my nephew there, is the one who loved grandma's grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yep.
So I guess you were around then too. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm so proud of Dwayne. He helps young people too.
Shout out Difference Maker. He's doing a wonderful
yes,
job
yes.
around the community. He's been highlighted on the news station multiple times. You just organized a Stop the Violence basketball camp. I was fortunate enough to have the podcast donate to that to help put that together. He's doing a marvelous job. Like you say, you have a right to be proud. Your nephew is truly a living legacy of yours.
Yeah, well, I bought some of those T-shirts he had, too, you know, about people being real. And that's it. We have to learn who is real and who is not, because everybody in your life is not there to help you. Ooh. There are people who will work to bring you down, but you just got to stand up to it. You got to have that, you know, to just move ahead. And I think that's what Dwayne has done. He's not allowed anything to keep him down. So I'm really very proud of him. In fact, I'm proud of all of Gus's sons. Lee, as I call him, and Roger, you know, they're just such wonderful young men. And I know that their mother, my sister Gussie, is proud of them for the things they're doing. Right now, I'm working on some of the similar problems that Dwayne is working on. It's called Take Back Our Neighborhood. Wow. And there we're going across the country working to inspire young people and to keep them out of trouble, help them get out of trouble if they're already there. And we'll wind up in Norfolk, Virginia on May 6th. The name of the program, so listen out for it, is Take Back Our Neighborhood.
Take Back Our Neighborhood.
Similar work to what Dwayne is doing there in Alexandria. And I also work with the World Conference of Mayors. These are mayors from all over the world. I'm really pleased, even though I've never been a mayor, but they saw me as a leader, and I was made a member of the board of directors of the World Conference of Mayors. And I do participate in their events. Every week we meet and we talk about how we can help each other, whether the mayor is in an African nation, whether they're in a small town here in the United States or what have you. We work to help them with resources, to help, you know, we're just friends, and we do whatever we can to help each other.
And look, speaking of helping each other, I wanted to bring up, because I know it seems like we're going from, you know, kind of stuff you're doing outside of politics to back in, but when I say trailblazer, you have such an extensive resume that I want people to know that you were the first, because when we say highlight Black history, you were a part of the President Obama's administration, who was, as we know, the first Black president. So how was it?
We always laugh. We laugh about that. We say I was supporting Barack before Michelle was.
So yes, you were at the forefront of that too.
I was on the Scholars Commission for him, working with young people who were becoming presidential scholars. We would meet and go over the kind of work they were doing in high school. And, you know, he loved children himself, and he always did things. Young men, not just Black young men, but he worked with Hispanic young men and all, trying to get them to rise to the highest level they could. So I was very proud of the fact that I had worked on the campaign. And that's where I met Michelle Obama on the campaign. I had met her husband previously, but I had met Michelle, and I said to her, I need you to help me when you become first lady, because I was so sure she was going to become first lady. When you become first lady, I want you to come and help me put Sojourner Truth in the United States Capitol. There's no Black woman there with a statue yet, and I'm working along with my organization to put her in the Capitol. Do you know she remembered? I said, yeah, some people do, even if it's the candidate's wives, they remember when they promise you to do something. And Michelle is one of those people. I've always been very proud of her. She came and she helped us to install Sojourner Truth in the Capitol. And today, there are two other Black women in the Capitol.
Wow.
After we started the first one, Rosa Parks is there now, and Mary McClung is there temporarily. But we're very proud that we do real work to inspire people. And that day when we put the Sojourner Truth statue in the Capitol, there was hardly standing room all around the Capitol, because everybody wanted to be there. Black women came from everywhere. Wow. Members of Congress came, and they were there. Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi was there and helped with the program. We were just so excited that day that we were able to get that done. So the other thing that Mr. Gregory and I did was we walked those halls of Congress along with Janet Langhart Cohen and a brother by the name of Mark Planning, and we were able to get a Senate apology for never having passed an anti-lynching bill. Do you know this past year, the Senate finally did that. They apologized in 2009, wow. but they passed a bill to do exactly what we were trying to do, and that was to call lynching a hate crime. That was just this past year that was passed. So sometimes these things take a long time, mm-hmm. but we initiated it with an apology mm-hmm. For lynching, and now it's a hate crime. So we do work every day, you know, hopefully that means something. Right now we're working to make Rosa Parks have a holiday, a federal holiday. You know, there is no black woman who has a federal holiday. We have lots of wow. men, mm-hmm. but we have no woman, period, who has a federal holiday.
Okay.
Right. So we want people to contact their members of Congress and say, vote for the Rosa Parks holiday.
Okay. We definitely need to get that going. So
yes.
Wow, I did not know that. I didn't recognize that. Now, you're mm-hmm. also...
But I hope that everyone will get a chance to read my book called Wake Up and Stay Woke.
Mm-hmm.
Wake Up and Stay Woke. Dick Gregory, Wake Up and Stay Woke. As I said, it's on Amazon, or they have my email. They can email me, and, you know, we can get the book to them.
Okay.
So, also keep up with my Dick Gregory website. We'll be doing things about economics. We'll be doing politics. We'll be doing social justice, you know, civil and human rights.
Gotcha.
And if you have ideas, if your listeners have ideas, they want us to highlight someone, say, during Women's History Month or mm-hmm. Black History Month or anytime, if they've done something wonderful for person kind, let me know and I'll be happy to put them on my radio program. I also write every week for all the black papers in the country.
Okay.
I can write an article about it. I don't know whether the newspaper in Alexandria, you still have a black newspaper, but I know in New Orleans, Seattle, Washington, mm-hmm. South Carolina, here in D.C., all over, they carry my articles every single week. I have not missed
wow.
1 week since I started in 2008. Every week I've written
wow.
an article. Yes.
When do you sleep?
I don't require a lot of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I go to sleep at the computer, you know, and wake up and go back to work.
Wow.
It's about just being persistent at what you're doing,
absolutely.
Eating right, exercising, thinking positively instead of, you know, the meanness we sometimes show against one another. That, you know, getting rid of the hate. You know, Mr. Gregory used to tell us that the things that make us sick as a people is jealousy and hatred.
Man.
and you know, things like that, fear.
Very true.
Yeah, we just have to get those things out of our system. No matter what someone is doing to you, try not to return it with hate or with jealousy in particular. Those are the things. And of course, being afraid to do anything. So many people are afraid to step out and make a difference, but it does make a difference in your life. It keeps you positive because you know you're accomplishing something, you're helping someone else, and in helping someone else, it makes me happy to do that. And Mr. Gregory used to say the same thing. He is happiest when he can make somebody else happy.
Hey,
the other one is anger. He always talks about getting rid of anger. You know, you don't have to go around all day being angry if someone has done something to you. Just move on. If that person only, you know, causes you to be angry or to be jealous or to be fearful, that means you need to move on and get yourself
remove
a different
them.
Set of friends.
Exactly. Remove them out your circle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, some people walk around sad all the time. They never find
never
anything
find.
To say good about a person, right?
Yes. Yeah, and look, before we come to a conclusion, like I said, you have your hands, you're doing so much, but I do want to bring up, you're also working with Dick Gregory's son, Dr. Christian Gregory, where you guys are putting
yes.
together an all-natural energy drink.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm sitting here with one beside me. It's called Spicy Lemon Lime. I know
okay.
that they're in California stores now in
mm-hmm.
7-Elevens. I know that they are in Houston now at a place, I think it's called The Market.
The Market.
And when I come for in May for Mother's Day, I'm bringing some with me. As a matter of fact, Dr. Gregory will be shipping them to Alexandria for me so that
okay.
we can let people know we have an alternative to, you know, those other drinks that you shouldn't be drinking. This is an energy drink. It's called 3E Energy Drink, and we have several different flavors. So
okay.
those of you who come by my mom's house when I'm there for Mother's Day weekend, you'll be able to find out what it's like. And you can also order them
okay.
on Amazon. And if you have that Prime membership,
okay.
you don't have to pay for the shipping. But I'll be sampling it when I'm in Alexandria in May so the friends can know what we're talking about. It's made of all vitamins. It doesn't have anything that's dangerous for your health in it.
Oh, good. That's good because, you know, our community,
right, again, just,
we eat bad enough.
Yeah, you can look on your website for 3E. That's the name of it, 3E. Okay. You know, just like every man or whatever, 3E. Okay. Energy drink, yes.
And that's the number three, right? Numeric number three.
Yes, the number three, okay. And then just the E, two, you know, a number and a letter. That's the name of it.
Okay. So y'all be on the lookout for that 3E energy drink.
It's been such a pleasure talking with you, and I hope that you'll be around and get a chance to stop by my mom's house in May when we're there.
Yes, ma'am. I can't wait to catch up and see you. Is there anything else you'd like to plug or highlight before we wrap up in conclusion?
Well, I would just like to say that Joe Simon, who's from Simsport, mm-hmm. Was a very good friend, and I had the opportunity to represent Alexandria and go to his funeral just a little over a year ago. We had become friends, and we had been working on voter registration. Everybody can do something to make a difference in this world, and one of the things that Joe chose, in addition to his having become a bishop, he was serious about people registering and then voting, because some people register and then don't go out to vote. But I want you to remember, Joe is a great person. Yes. I know we used to love his music that he did all the time, but he had become a bishop and he was singing a different kind of song, but he was still working for our people.
There you have it. As you can see, she is still continuing in the fight, still on the front line. Vote, vote, vote. Let her see her legacy come to fruition. And again, I would like to thank you. We give you your flowers. You are the epitome of Black excellence. So I thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk with me today out your busy schedule. You could have been doing anything, but you made time for me. I will never forget that, and I appreciate it. As always, I want you all to remember, always visualize your goals. And after that, accomplish those visualized goals. 9/11, gone.